Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by You Need a Budget, aka YNAB. Later in the episode, I'll explain how their online budgeting tools are a huge help when it comes to tracking and saving money. And you can get 3 months of YNAB free by signing up at YNAB.com/YHL. That's YNAB.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're talking new construction, including tips for choosing a builder, pitfalls to avoid, and regrets from our own building projects. Plus how some of our best laid plans at the beach house got thwarted, and why we're taking our bathroom habits outside. So we're in the midst of an experiment at our house. I would call it a surprising conundrum that we found ourselves in.
I would call it a gross experiment.
Well, after bragging about our bushes and our success rate and how everything's thriving, and I think they replaced a few things, but it's looking great out there, we went away for 5 days. And the deer here are savages. And in those 5 days, they stopped smelling our dog, they stopped smelling us around the backyard, and they went in for the kill.
Yes, this is our working theory, at least.
I mean, I know it's the deer because they've done this to other plants before and we've caught them red-handed.
Well, no, I know it's the deer. I'm saying it's a working theory that being gone is what caused it. Like, they didn't sense our presence anymore.
Right. No, something set them off. Like, they were like, this is the time. And you know what they did, guys? They ate my beloved ginkgo tree. Like, 2/3 of it is just gone, decimated. I'll put a picture in the show notes. It's the saddest thing you ever saw. And you know I'm obsessed with the ginkgo. Like, they went for my weakest point.
Well, we had shared the last time we talked about our backyard landscaping in the podcast how, like, everything was doing great except for, like, the weeping cherry they had nibbled on. But we were like, things are doing well. And then it just took a turn here. I mean, they even shredded the hollies. Like, all the new growth we've had on the hollies over the last few weeks is gone, except for the very tippy top where they couldn't reach.
I know. It's, like, so obviously them. People are like, oh, maybe it's a raccoon or something else. They have, like, a horizontal line of where they can reach. And so everything is nibbled up to the same line, and it is definitely the deer line.
Yes, it has deer written all over it. So this is why we have taken on a very gross experiment.
Okay, so this is the thing. I put it on Insta stories. I said, there has been a murder in the backyard. What should I do? And, like, overwhelmingly, the reactions were human pee. Like, everyone was saying, just get your son and your husband to pee on the tree. And I was like, this is personal. I'm getting 10 glasses of water. I'm going to wait for nature to call. I'm going to go out there in the cover of darkness. I'm going to take care of business. And then someone commented and was like, no, no, just pee in a cup. And I was like, oh, I don't have to pee in the yard.
I feel like this whole conversation should have, like, a content warning on it. Like, if you are not in the mood for a discussion of human urine.
Guys, this is where it comes from. People used to say coyote urine or other things that are predators. And then other people started piping in and saying, like, no, any urine that just doesn't smell like a deer will annoy the deer and make them not want to be there.
Yeah, like, our friends who actually use the same landscape company said they went and, like, ordered some, was it coyote?
Yeah, coyote urine on Amazon.
Yeah, like, you can literally buy pee on Amazon. And when they told me that, I'm like, I am far above buying urine on Amazon.
Right.
But clearly now I'm not above peeing into a cup. So I don't really know where my standards are anymore.
And you might say that's so gross, but listen.
It is gross. I feel gross every time.
But let me explain. First of all, it's organic and free. It comes from the body, right? Like breastfeeding.
Oh, this is the justification moment of this discussion.
Okay. Second of all, we're all willing to pee in a cup for the doctor, right? For our own health, we pee in a cup. Why would I not pee in a cup for the health of my ginkgo?
Well, and this is also where the experiment comes in because, you know, Sherry has gotten me involved.
Well, I think John was jealous that I was having all the fun.
I was not jealous. I just felt bad, I guess.
He wanted to be part of the experiment. You love an experiment. So there's 3 sections of this experiment. There are bushes in basically 3 areas that are all getting nibbled, and they're getting nibbled equally. So it's not like they like one group more than the other. So these are equal groups, right? Group A, I put paprika on them because it was another suggestion a lot of people had.
Was it paprika or cayenne?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Something cayenne. What's
cayenne
it called?
Pepper, right?
Cayenne pepper. Yeah. That's what it was. Cayenne from Queer Eye. People said sprinkle cayenne pepper on them. They don't like the smell. It's too spicy. So group A, I sprinkled cayenne pepper on. Group B is the pea group.
I would like to point out that Sherry did not mention the cayenne pepper option to me until group B was already underway.
And then I was like, I'm also going to use cayenne pepper. And then group C, which was debated by John. Group C is the control, so we're not doing anything for group C. And John said, shouldn't we do something to protect it? People have suggested, like, Irish mist. Is that what it's called?
No, Irish spring.
Irish spring soap. And they've said, like, oh, you should netted. We've netted trees before because the deer have nibbled on a maple.
That's worked for us in the past.
It's worked, but the problem is the leaves grow through the netting. And then when I removed the netting, the leaves got pulled off with the netting. Like, the netting was becoming part of the tree.
Yeah, one year I had to, like, meticulously clip around the netting to get it off.
Right. It was like, you know, those documentaries where fish get stuck in like one of those six packs for sodas. It was like that. The ginkgo was stuck all in the netting.
Well, this was the maple.
The maple, sorry. But you know what I was going to say is that I believe in these experiments. And we've actually done them a bunch. Like on our blog, we had like maybe six or eight rooms of wallpaper in this house when we bought it. And we tried a different method in each room to remove the wallpaper. And then we evaluated the best method to remove the wallpaper.
Yes.
So although this has a gross component.
Yeah, we're not going to photograph this method.
Right. Maybe I'll take a picture of paprika. I mean, cayenne pepper. Sorry. Don't use paprika. I mean, I don't think they'll like paprika.
But you may just be wasting some of your spices.
But anyway, what I was going to say is that a few other methods that people have suggested were some chemicals. I was resistant to the chemicals like Liquid Fence or Bobbit or all these other things because they do have warnings that they're not very safe for children or small pets.
Well, and didn't you also hear human hair works too?
Yeah, so someone said like go to a salon. I cut everyone's hair at home, so I am debating saving the hair and taking it off brushes and trying. Essentially what I hear is that they don't like anything that smells like humans. So hair smells like humans, urine smells like humans. I've even heard like Axe body spray, like cologne. Someone else said tying up hotel soap, like there's an orchard in their town and they solicit people at home, if you have free hotel soap, put it on a rope and hang it on the orchard.
What I'm hearing here is there are lots of other options that were less disgusting.
Well, I'm telling you, times 100, the pee suggestion came in. Like someone said, my aunt tried every chemical. She tried sensors that shot sprinklers at them, like motion detecting things.
I'm into that.
Someone said like an electric current type thing, which I'm not electrocuting the deer. We actually love the deer. We just want the deer to eat the thousands of other species in the woods. We just don't want them to come up and nibble on these supposedly deer-resistant things that they're all eating instead.
That we paid for.
That we bought with our own money. Yes.
So we will have an update on this experiment as the summer goes on.
Yes.
And moving on to something a little bit more tame, if we may, I wanted to share a story that is a perfect example of why some of the projects at our beach house have been difficult to execute. I think I've said over the last couple of years how working on a project that's 2.5 hours away can be complicated.
Yes, there are quick turnaround times. There is bringing all the materials with you. There are weather constraints. There's a lot to juggle.
Yes, and the most recent project was we were trying to stain the steps at the pink house. So on our side door and our back door, we just have some simple wooden steps that the contractor installed for us last fall. We had wanted to do like some Trex or, you know, PVC type thing that wouldn't have to be maintained as much, but it was just kind of like not in the budget at the moment. Wood was cheaper.
Right. Well, I first priced out brick and it was staggeringly expensive because we did do brick in the front because it's historic and it matches the foundation. And that came out amazingly, but we just couldn't afford three brick staircases.
Yeah. And so it was put in last fall too late to do any staining to it then because it started to get too cold. So one of our projects on our list this spring was to finally like seal and stain that. So we went out a few weeks ago and brought the stain with us. I brought my power washer. We bought like a cleaner to get all the mildew and everything that had built up over the winter. So like we were ready to tackle this within a weekend. So I set off on Saturday morning and I power washed it lightly to get some of the stains off. And then I followed up with this cleaner, like scrubbing it off and all that stuff. Like it was a big process that took me all Saturday morning to do both steps.
Right. So we were ready to stain.
Well, the problem with the stain was that you couldn't do it when it was in direct sunlight. And the side steps are in direct sunlight from basically sunrise until sunset because the sun sweeps on that side of the house. So I knew I had to wait until basically it was behind the trees during sunset to start.
Right. And then you know what happens, guys, it gets pitch dark. So like there was a window and we didn't want to be doing it in pitch dark with like flashlights because we knew we'd do a horrible job.
Yeah. So we were very prepared to get it done in this time frame. It was a small area, just like a small landing and a couple steps. And the sun starts to set. We break out the stain. I put on a test area on the side. And Sherry and I hate the color.
It's like purple. And the color is called acorn brown. And every test swatch we saw, it was a very tame, brownish, light mocha color. I have no idea how it turned purple. We were debating whether like the reflection of the pink on the house was changing it.
Yeah.
I just think it was either a mistint, although it couldn't have been a mistint because we bought it right off the shelf labeled acorn brown. Like nobody mixed it for us. But I just think every single tester that showed it didn't show it within 5 shades of being correct. Like it was so different.
Well, you know that those testers that they show like on the shelf are not always perfect because it depends on your wood tone. But this was one of the challenges that we had in doing this project is that we were buying it from Home Depot. There's not a Home Depot in Cape Charles. And so we couldn't like get a tester and then like bring it and check it out. We sort of just had to like go for it, I guess.
Right. We could have arrived with a bunch of little test pots, but it would mean we couldn't stain it that time.
Yes.
And so we wanted to just clean it and do it, not clean it, test it, come back another week and then do it.
Right. Exactly. So we knew we were taking a risk by just like choosing a color and going with it, but we didn't expect it to be so far off. And we really didn't want like purple steps next to a pink house.
Ugh, guys, it was barfy.
Yeah. So anyways, that sort of ruined it for that weekend. Cause again, there's not a Home Depot there where we could go buy another product. And it was Saturday night. The home improvement stores in Cape Charles were already closed, and surprise, they're not open on Sunday.
Yes. It's a very small town. So people who say like, wait, do you frequent the local home improvement shops there? Yes. All the time. But we also arrive with stuff because their hours are very, very different than ours in Richmond. Like you can be there on a whole weekend and miss them being open.
Yeah, like one of them closes at noon on Saturday. And after that, you're kind of like out of luck. You have to drive across a bridge 45 minutes and pay an $18 toll.
Right, like you don't want to pay the toll. You don't want to drive all that way. So you come with what you need and then you buy whatever you don't have if it's open.
Yeah, so it was totally a bust that weekend. Like we had this perfectly clean stairs and nothing to stain it with.
And we watched the birds poop on them and we knew we'd have to clean them all over again. So it was not even like we paused. We went backwards because we had to rewash everything the next time we were there to prep it again.
Well, it wasn't even the next time because we arrived to do it the next visit and it was raining. And obviously you can't do it when it's raining. So that was a bust that weekend.
Call it a wash.
A wash.
A literal wash.
So it was like 2 weekends later that we finally were getting there. We're like, we're going to do it. The weather is dry. I have enough time to sort of clean it off before I start. But again, we were working in this really tiny window from between when the sun started to set and when it was pitch black. And so we actually like arrived there after driving 2.5 hours about 7:30 that night. And I just like got to it. I was like, I can't even talk to anyone or do anything else. Like I got to go because the clock is ticking. And so I started staining, and I really underestimated how much time it takes to do each of those individual posts.
Wait, but you didn't tell everyone what color we picked.
Oh yeah. After much debate back at home in Richmond, we picked, ready for it, clear.
And it's beautiful. It makes it so much richer. I think the problem I had with picking clear was I was worried it would just look the same. And you don't want to do all this work for it to just look the same. But it really makes it look rich. It reminds me of the pine floors we have inside. It's kind of like a warm tone, but not too crazy. And it actually looks great with the pink. Like four people who hardly ever see our house noticed the stairs and were like, oh, hey, did you seal these? They look great. So it really stands out and looks great. We'll put a picture in the show notes. But let's go back to the small window of time.
Yeah, so I was staining this thing and all those individual posts on the railing took forever to do the front and back. And it got dark. I ran out of time before I finished even half of the first set of steps. And yes, I could have brought some lights out, but I was finding it was really hard to see where I had stained and where I hadn't because the clear is clear.
Right. You know? And you might say like, well, just do your best and then touch it up. But no. The way that this stain works is you're supposed to keep a wet edge, quote unquote. It means if something dries and you go over it again, it will look double painted and it will look weird in that spot. Like the overlapping of the stain doesn't look great.
Yeah. So I stopped at like a natural edge where I could start the next morning. I tried to do it as early as I could, but the sun was already starting to come up because, you know, in the summertime, it's up at like 5:30 in the morning.
I had a series of bad ideas. I was like, let's move the trash can and block it. But the trash can provides zero shade to these steps.
How tall do you think our trash can is?
I was like, I'll stand out there with a blanket and I'll block it. That was also not going to work because the sun is above me, guys.
Yeah, so I ended up doing half the steps in the blazing sun. It wasn't ideal, but it worked out just fine. And we still have to go back and do a second coat because they do require 2 coats with the product we ended up using. It was a Bayer product. I'll link it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. But I couldn't do it that weekend because it needed time to dry. And then it got cloudy and rainy again in the forecast. So it's like just a whole mess trying to do that stuff where you don't actually live there full time, which makes me excited for the summertime where we can spend some extended trips there. Like we could stay a whole week because the kids are out of school. Like that's when we're going to try to do things like the backsplash in the kitchen because I know that's a project I don't want to try to squeeze in to like a weekend trip.
Oh, yeah. The backsplash would easily take us like 8 or 9 trips if we did it over trips. So we're going to go there for like a solid week and we're going to bring some reinforcements like the grandparents to watch the kids while we get it done. And I think it will be one of those examples of why sometimes renovating house when you don't live there is wonderful for your sanity. Like a lot of this beach house has been great to be removed as the dust flies. But then a lot of the other projects you wish you were closer because you'd knock a lot out a lot faster. So it feels like a lot of trips to just make a little progress sometimes.
So hopefully this particular project will be done soon if the weather cooperates.
Yes. But anyway, now we're going to move on to a listener question. And it's actually not from one listener. We've gotten this question like a ton.
Yeah. We talk a lot on this podcast and on our blog about renovating old homes. But we've been asked several times for advice on new construction, like if you were going to build a home from scratch. And you may be wondering, like, what the heck do we have to say about that? Because we have not done a new build for ourselves. But we have worked with a builder on our show house back in 2014, and we've done some spec work with him on other houses. And also, actually, doing the beach house renovations and the duplex renovations has a lot of similarities to the new building process that we can sort of apply to if you were doing new construction.
Right, because we go all the way back to the studs. So when you get your electrical and plumbing, you have to choose where the light switches go and where the toilet's going to go. And we super plan these houses that we renovate at the beach. So aside from our own expertise, we also interviewed some other people who have created new constructions. And we wanted their advice too, because I think if you're listening and you're thinking about building a house, or maybe you're just renovating a kitchen down to the studs and rebuilding it, sort of the same thing. It's like, what pitfalls do you want to avoid? What should you expect from the process? How do you find the right team? So we're going to try and cover all of that.
Yeah. For me, the biggest takeaway I've had from our experience is just the sheer volume of decisions that need to be made. Like, it is kind of overwhelming, especially because you are making them oftentimes for an entire house at once. Like, I remember when we were going through the show house process, like things like picking out the doorknobs and the door latches, like what is the finish and the shape and the size of those things that you do not think twice about when you buy a house for the most part, but you may be asked for your input. And I know that sounds easy, like, oh, I would just pick the brass ones or whatever. But if you think about those types of decisions times 100, like Sherry said, where do all the light switches go? The outlets, where is the drain for the shower? Like, depending on how custom your build is, you may have to really think through all these minuscule things.
I mean, think about door swing, guys. Say you point to where you want the light switch, and then the door swings in front of the switch. Like, there are so many things to consider. We had some light switch placements that then once the thick molding went in, the molding almost covered the plate. Like, you have to think about every single thing, the height of outlets in your kitchen. You don't want them 12 inches above the counter because then they can't be covered with like a bowl of fruit or something nice on the counter. They're flying high in a weird way. So you try to think about every single thing. And this is going to sound bad, but no matter how hard you try, you can't think of everything.
Yeah.
So I think my first advice would be, come to terms with the fact that even if you're building something new or renovating a room from scratch, there will be things that in hindsight you could have placed better or chosen better or moved in a different way, but nobody can see the future. So like, I think we go into this renovation process or a new build process and we think, oh, great. I'm creating something totally new for myself and I'm going to get everything I want. Everything
yes.
on my list is going to be checked off.
I think that's a lot of the motivation behind people who say they want a new build versus buying an old house, because they think, I want to get my perfect house. Like, I want to create my dream house, which is a big plus. But I think from the people we've talked to and the processes we've gone through, we know you still don't get exactly what you want, because ultimately you are working on a team with your builder or your contractor. And there are just limitations and processes that you have to fit yourself into. I think one general starting point we should talk about when thinking about new builds is finding the right builder to work with. Just like finding the right contractor for a renovation, your builder is going to be like your work spouse. Like, it's going to be almost like a marriage. It's going to be intense. There will probably be arguments and disagreements at moments. And so you need to find someone who you can work well with.
Right. Basically, everyone we talk to about this, and some people want to remain anonymous and some people are cool with us saying their names, nobody said they never had a conflict with their builder. It just varied how well they came together after the conflict.
Yeah.
Some people continued to have conflicts their entire time with the builder and wouldn't work with them again. Others reflect on it as a really positive experience with some stressful moments that they got through.
Right. So I think you want to be able to find someone who up front shares a similar vision, maybe a similar aesthetic, or at least a similar communication style. Like, you, Sherry, and our contractor in particular have a really good rapport. And
we speak the same language. We're both from Jersey.
Yep.
The minute I met him, I knew, because I gave it to him. Like, I was a little rough and I was like, well, do you not want this job? And he gave it right back to me. He's like, well, do you not want me to be your contractor? And I was like, this will be great.
Yes.
But we interviewed other people and it wasn't like that. So my number one suggestion would be, ask your friends who have new constructions, go on Facebook, cast a wide net.
Well, just like we said for contractors, try to visit the work. Like, go see other homes that this builder has done. The thing with builders is that there are different sort of levels. Like, there are some people who do custom builds, like a completely new idea for a house or a new floor plan. Then there's a sort of a notch down to the semi-custom, where you might start with an existing floor plan they have, but then you have lots of options for adjusting it, changing the finishes, changing the layout. Like, you can kind of adapt an existing house to meet your needs.
To a certain point.
To a certain point. And then there's also kind of like the production or the track builders who sort of say, you have one of three floor plans you can choose and like two lighting options you can put in this room. Like, it's very much like a template that you just sort of have to choose from one of a few options.
Right. It's like, we have tan carpet, gray carpet, or cream carpet.
Yeah. And I'll say that in my opinion, I don't think you ever truly get a custom build, because arguably what we're doing in these renovations at the beach are completely custom. Like, they are one-of-a-kind projects. So we're getting a unique product from our contractor in the renovation we're doing. But still, we are kind of plugging ourselves into his process. Like, he has people he works with, he has ways of doing things. And so we're just trying to map that onto this house. And sometimes it creates some limitations for us that are tough.
Right. I mean, you guys have heard about how we were hunting for these diamond doors for the duplex. And guess what? Our contractor went to a bunch of his door vendors and nobody could find or make them. They couldn't even customize them for us. So he said to us, if you guys want to find them, you can. And we were left with the task of finding one secondhand, but we weren't able to get any more. And that's the challenge. The other door that we need, we'll just have to get through one of his vendors and it won't be exactly what we want.
Yeah. And when we did the show house back in 2014, we had existing vendors that we had to work with for every part of the process, like from the flooring to the cabinetry to
front door.
Yeah, to the tile. Like, I remember Sherry and I, who are scrappy and love finding like sales and deals places, like, we're very good at finding good looking tile at cheap places like Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever.
Floor and decor.
Right. But he was like, no, I've got this one vendor that I have to use.
Right. And it was stuff I knew I could find cheaper somewhere else. But he was saying, no, I always work with them. Their warranty is good. If something cracks, they'll fix it. Like, they're the known entity that I work with for tile, and I'm not changing my known entity.
Yeah. And there were some places where he did give us some leeway. Like, we were able to go outside of his typical lighting vendor, incorporate some of our own lighting from Shades of Light. But that just made the process more complicated and introduced more opportunities for hiccups or delays or miscommunications. So even if you're doing a custom build, you may not be able to completely customize your choices.
Yeah, one of the people we talked to is Dusty from All Things G&D. She's a blogger. I'll put a link to her blog in the show notes, but she did a new build and it's been about 2 years. And I loved picking her brain because she actually said letting the dust settle and looking back 2 years ago helped her see sort of from a global perspective what she would have changed and what she would have done differently and what the most challenging parts of the process were. And she said by far the hardest point for her to get over was that she hired a custom builder and really, really liked them, like would recommend them, loves her home. But the hardest parts, like the speed bumps of the project, always revolved around the builder not giving her enough freedom. Like, she was saying, this is a custom house. If I want to find a secondhand light fixture and have you install it, if I want to go beyond your vendors and find an amazing faucet, I want to be able to do that. And he would say, yes, but it's slowing down my timeline and my bottom line and my prices are based on finishing this house within a certain timeline. So what she said really worked for her was she and her husband tried to be on the same team so that when the builder says that can't be done, we will support each other. And if he says no to me, my husband will say, wait, why'd you say no? And kind of be on my team.
It's a simple 2 versus 1 scenario, sounds like. I also like Dusty's advice that when she was working on her floor plan and customizing her floor plan, she recommended focusing on a couple things. One was solving pet peeves of your existing house or your previous homes. Like, you presumably are building a new house to make improvements over your current living situation. So right. Think about the things that bug you about your current house and make sure you focus on fixing those, or you don't overlook those when you are designing a new floor plan. The other thing she said was make sure you focus on putting the square footage where it matters, which is something we've been talking a lot lately in this whole like big house discussion. She said for them, like, they didn't want a big bedroom. They didn't want this like seating area. Like, they wanted an area for a bed. So they were not going to pay the builder to build square footage they didn't want.
And it was crazy. She said when he showed her all the houses he had ever done, he made all these huge bedrooms and he just said, listen, that's what a master is. And she said, no, I want a place for my bed and 2 nightstands. And that's it. There's not a bench. There's not a seating area. There's not a sofa. There's not an elliptical machine. There's not a fireplace. There's nothing. There's just the bed and the nightstands.
But I think those are the moments where it can get tough working with any level of builder, because they might say like, well, that's what my floor plans are. And if you want to make a big change like that, it's going to cost you X, because like I have to go back to my architect or whatever.
Right.
She also said something that I thought was really helpful, is that some things can be done after the builder is gone. So once he has checked off the house and delivered it to you, you can save some budget by doing some things on your own. Her example was they didn't have the builder put in a backsplash in the kitchen, because they figured that's something they can live without for a little bit, figure out what they want, and then when the time comes, they can do it themselves.
Right, or hire it out at that point, but it wasn't going to be holding up the project. So another example of how she saved some money was that she couldn't find a few light fixtures that she loved, and all his light fixture providers had basic lights that started at around $100. There wasn't like a $20 option.
Right, if you wanted the stock fixture.
Right.
It was not cheap.
So it was committing to a mediocre light she didn't like for $100, which I think under pressure you might just do. You might say, I don't like anything, I'll replace it later, I'll take that $100 mediocre thing.
Right.
She refused to pay $100 for something she knew she would replace. So she walked into Home Depot and she bought those $20 boob lights, and she said, put these boob lights up. And he said, I'm not putting boob lights in my custom home. And she said, yes, you are, because I'm going to take them down. And I don't want to put these mediocre expensive lights up and have to take them down. I'll feel stupid. And so, you know, in order to pass inspection, they do have to hang lights and finish off the electrical. So they put the boob lights up. 2 years later, she has since replaced them with things she loved. She had the time to find exactly what she wanted. Some are secondhand. Some are things at stores that the builder couldn't access. And so I think she's really happy with her home feeling super custom and not having the timeline stall or spin her wheels in panic when he said the lights are due.
Right. Because sometimes it feels like in these projects, like you have a ticking clock because the builder has deadlines or you have a deadline that you're trying to hit. And with all these decisions needing to be made and all these moving parts and people, like it can become really stressful trying to get everything checked off and race towards this finish line where you can move in. So I think if there are things you can sort of push to take care of after that finish line, it just alleviates some sort of stress. And I'm sure a bunch of you guys listening who have gone through the new build process or a similar process, maybe a major renovation, are thinking about all the tips that you have for going through new build, maybe your regrets or lessons learned. So when we share this episode on Facebook and Instagram, please leave us your tips in the comments. We would love to hear some other advice that you guys have for people starting to embark on the new build process.
Yeah, maybe we can do an update if there are a bunch of good tips.
And if you guys have a question you want us to answer on a future episode, you can always leave us a voicemail. The phone number is 571-4-YHL-HAP, as in Young House Love Has a Podcast, because we do.
And you're listening to it right now.
Yes. And this podcast also needs to take a break, but then we will come back with We're Digging.
So we've talked to you about this week's sponsor before. Remember, they're called You Need a Budget. The cool kids call them YNAB. And you guys actually recommended them to us way back last fall, and we've been using them ever since you recommended them to us. Now they're a sponsor.
Yeah, and so as a refresher, YNAB is an online budgeting tool that basically lets you securely sync all of your bank accounts so that anytime you spend money or you deposit money to your bank account, it syncs and categorizes your budget automatically.
Yeah, and then you can track where you could maybe cut back, how you could adjust certain budgets or habits to save up for something like a big vacation or a big purchase.
Well, and we personally found YNAB really helpful when we were doing our shopping ban a few weeks ago, because all of the categories that we were restricting ourselves from, like clothing, home decor, furniture, those things were already categories I had set up in YNAB, so we could watch through that month to make sure that we had zero transactions going into those categories.
I mean, we could watch ourselves at the checkout and make sure we had zero transactions, but the thing I loved was seeing how much money we saved by having zero in those categories.
It was so satisfying to see like, oh, I really didn't spend anything. I did not cheat. So if you guys want to give YNAB a try, whether you're going on a shopping ban or not, you can get your first 3 months free by signing up at YNAB.com/YHL. There's no code to enter. Just go to YNAB.com/YHL, and the first 3 months will be on them. What Sherry was digging last week has actually inspired me to open up about something that I'm digging this week. You may recall that Sherry last week was digging some new shorts that she bought. And guess what, people? I have some new shorts that I am digging.
Fancy that.
Yeah, this segment is just turning into a fashion segment, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I am basically a fashionista.
Hashtag fashion blogger.
Well, so I got myself a new pair of shorts recently. And the reason I want to dig them is because I really love them. And they also are the antithesis to the shorts that I hunted down last year when I needed a new pair of shorts. I spent way too much on a pair of khaki shorts at J.Crew because I could not find any shorts anywhere last summer.
It was a travesty, guys. He was whining about it for a while. Nobody makes good shorts anymore. And I was like, are we grandparents? Like, are we those people looking for something that is now out of style and therefore not made?
My old Gap shorts had gotten a hole in them. They are now my painting shorts. I actually did the staining at the beach house in them. So I needed a new pair last year and I could not find them. So I spent more than I'm willing to say at J.Crew on these shorts that I am just so-so about. So then just a couple weeks ago, I was at Target and I stumbled upon these new shorts from their Goodfellow and Company line or whatever it's called. They're called the Linden Flat Front 9-inch Seam
Shorts. And you're like, I'm a guy with a beard. I'm going to get these Goodfellow shorts because they just sound so hipster and cool.
They do sound very hipster. But this is why I love them. Not only do they fit very well, and they were only like $19, about a third or a fourth or possibly a fifth of what I spent.
Oh my gosh, those were the most expensive shorts I've ever heard of in my life.
They also are stretchy.
Yes, John was snapping them in the car and going, look, they stretch.
Remember how much I love stretchy jeans? Now I have stretchy shorts.
He does love them. And guys, I really think they're very handsome. He wears them with like a dark t-shirt. They're really cute. They're like a bluish.
Well, they come in several colors. I got kind of the cobalt blue. No, this isn't a cobalt.
It's like
what is
a slate blue. It's like a charcoal-y blue.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just dancing around the word navy.
Maybe a washed navy. How about
They're
that?
They're really nice looking. And I complimented him. And he's like, well, because they stretch and you complimented me, I'm now going to get all the colors. And yes. I said, let's not go crazy.
I'm going to go back for more because I will be below my short budget from last summer. Even if I get 8 more pairs. No, not really.
Maybe 2 more.
But I will put a link in the show notes to them. Again, they are the Linden shorts from Target's Goodfellow. I always want to say Goodfella, but it's Goodfellow.
And Company?
And Co., I think.
There's like an ampersand.
But they're great. I recommend all the men in your life have them.
And what I'm digging this week is actually an Instagram account that I'm obsessed with, and it's called Cheap Old Houses. I've been following them since like 500 followers. I got on board early. I'm obsessed with them. They now have over 150,000 followers, and like one of the members of New Kids on the Block retweeted it or something.
Well, now they've made it.
They're exploding. But anyway, all the concept is that this home-loving person finds homes that are under $100,000 and they're all old and they need love. And they post them and say, save this house. So like, there'll be one in Danville, Illinois, and there'll be a picture with a lot of other pictures. You can slide to see all the interior shots. And it'll say, this one is $89,000. I've seen some for under $20,000. These amazing homes that need love. And I'm obsessed with it. The only thing that's a negative about following this account is I want to buy all the houses.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, this is not necessarily a good thing for you.
I just want all of them. And you know what's funny? People have started tagging me in anything in Virginia. And they're like, young ass love, get this one, get this one.
I might have to secretly unfollow this on your phone.
I've been resisting it, but it is really fun to follow. And I love the cause. I love that tons of people are following them now because I'm hopeful that these old homes will get snatched up and brought back to glory. And that is really something I am passionate about now. So I love it.
They need like updates on that one.
I know, that would be cool, right? Like people who bought it show you the new photos. Oh, that'd be so good. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And an especially big thanks to all of our new listeners out there. First of all, let me say that we're happy you're here. Thank you for finding us. Thank you for sticking around for the outro. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast as well so that you get new episodes automatically downloaded to your phone. It's free and all you have to do is tap subscribe in your podcast listening app.
And keep telling us what you do while you listen. Like Elizabeth on Instagram, who listened while cleaning a 400-year-old pig skull at an archaeology dig site. You know, just the usual.
As one does.
And don't forget to check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode.
Like before and after pictures of the stained stairs at the beach house and photo evidence of our poor nibbled bushes in the backyard.
You guys, it's so sad. Pour one out for the ginkgo.
Ew, I know what you're pouring now.
Later.
Bye. Okay, will you test your side of the mic?
Testing. La 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 la. Shakira on the podcast. I'm at your feet.
Why do all of your mic tests turn into impersonations?
Wherever we're meant to be together, I'll be there and you'll be mine. I wish I knew the words. This would be more successful.